Hey yo, what's up world? This is DJ JS1 of the legendary Rocksteady Crew. Right now, you're listening to The Library. My man, Tim Einenkill.
So now we're here at the beginning of the end. I'll send salutations. Please allow me to extend an invitation for you to make a move to the future. It may take a little extra to uproot ya. Escucha, listen, let me your ear.
Atlanta's Dylan and Bronx's own Diamond D have linked up to create their newest EP called Black Tie Affair. The ATL MC joins me now in the library with Tim Einenkill. Dylan, thank you so much for taking the time for this interview.
Peace. Thanks for having me, yo. Good to be here in the library. Different lane they can take, so just get yours, live it up to the utmost. As a matter of fact, I would like to make a toast to the universe. Personally, I want to see us all rise to the furthest degree. So come on, we riding out, we about to dip. Take a trip to the future.
Cool, thanks, man. So Dylan, first, you're a DJ, you're a producer, you're obviously an MC, but you're also a vegan chef. How did all this happen?
As a young teenager, growing up in Jacksonville, Florida, I lived kind of near the Navy base, and I was surrounded by Filipinos, man, and they could all break dance and scratch and DJ and all that. This was like the mid-90s and stuff, so I was really fascinated by that, and I tried break dancing first when I was about 12, 13, I was a little too chubby. You know what I'm saying? I was still shopping in the Husky section. So that didn't quite work out for me. So I decided that if I couldn't break dance, then it would be cool for me to try to DJ and provide the music. So I got my first little set of turntables, the little belt drive joints next year. You know, I mowed lawns all year and saved up. Got me a little crate of records, and it was all like Debbie Deb, Freestyle, Planet Rock, all like the electro type stuff. That was all my first records and all the stuff I was into.
Nice.
And started DJing and stuff. Did my first little party at like 15. And I couldn't keep up with how expensive it was. You know, but DJs these days have it so easy. You just need a laptop, and, you know, and you can get the music for free and stuff. But you remember back then, like, you had to go buy the vinyl, bro.
Right.
As a teenager, you know, like, you get about your little $7 a week allowance. That's one record. So, you know, like, it was hard to keep up. So I picked up the pen since that was free. And I started writing rhymes and doing that. My dad is a writer and my mom was a singer and stuff. So that was like a natural progression for me. I'm definitely an MC and a writer first and foremost, above anything else. And so writing just made the most sense for me. And when I went to college, I started taking that a lot more seriously, performing and whatnot. And it was in college, I basically worked full time so I could put some money aside to record a demo. And I started working as a hibachi chef while I was in school at the University of Florida. That's a whole other story in and of itself. Basically, the restaurant got robbed, all the chefs left, and here I was, this 17-year-old kid with braces, and the owner's like, do you want to learn how to do this? I need you to help me. And I was like, all right. So I trained how to be a hibachi chef and did that full-time all through college, and that gave me like a culinary background. And at the same time, I was writing my first songs and recording all my first stuff, you know, my early, you know, early 20s, late teens. And so that's kind of how that all started and kind of fused at the same time. That's actually where I met Mr. Chuck D.
Yo, check this out. This is Chuck D, a Public Enemy.
While I was cooking at my restaurant, and I cooked for him.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, we've connected and we've been friends since then, and I actually got him on my first album. Which is called Studies in Hunger.
And the staff, we went over to the Hibachi Grill, and he was the chef over there. So, you know, I asked my man, I said, you know, okay, you don't look like you are a chef in the Hibachi Grill. And he was telling me how he was all into hip-hop and was making his music, but also wanted to put together something that was combining the music, the style, the hip-hop, and the food. So as he made the grill of sushi, fried rice, veggies, and everything that he hooked up on the grill.
I don't know, I've always been passionate about food. it's a lot easier for me than music, and it's a lot more delicious. So I know that's a long, drawn-out answer, but that's pretty much where it is.
You obviously always seem like from a young age, you're always serious about one aspect of music, right? And then, you know, you just said you just got older and your passion grew to writing. And then when you're kind of became serious about being a chef, did you see obviously how these two kind of art, pretty much art forms, right? How they started influencing each other in your daily life or in your,
absolutely.
You know, like...
Absolutely. Because when I started cooking, you know, the hibachi chef, you know, you're out there cooking in front of people, doing the show and the tricks, telling jokes, you know, doing all that. And I was doing all that stuff, you know, the onion volcano and tossing the knives around and all that. And I was like 18, you know, so it gave me a lot of my stage chops my performance chops. And it took a lot of the fear of performing in front of people, you know, because here I am cooking this dude's $40 filet mignon. I overcooked it a little bit. I better tell a joke so he doesn't notice. You know what I mean? So that, and by my senior year, I was literally selling CDs at the table. So I would come out and do a little rap, and like I would rap people's order. You know, they come out, you order steak and shrimp, you get steak and chicken. I would rap it and freestyle it, and then like sell CDs at the table, and it was like this whole thing. And so really that was, it was just like out of necessity, you know, because I was at this restaurant five nights a week and I had these CDs that I was trying to sell. So I was like, you people are in front of me. Buy this too. That's pretty much how it all started.
Did you ever have a moment that you had to kind of stop cooking because you had this great idea for like a lyric or a track that came in your mind and you're like, oh shit, I gotta go out?
Nah, that would have been some class. Yeah. Now looking back now, if I were to go back and try it again, I would totally do it like that. Like, y'all hold on, I'm gonna let this chicken cook. Let me write this down real quick.
So Dylan, you have this new EP with Diamond D, Black Tie Affair. If you just kind of bring us in, like, how did this actual collaboration happen? I know you two met back in 2008, but when did that conversation really start about actually wanting to work together or kind of even create this EP?
Word up. Yeah, man. Props to Diamond, a true B-boy, a true just hip-hop head and fan of the culture. His energy is so fly. He has like a really true, like, youthful expression for this. And we met years back. I used to live with this band called Collective Efforts, and he would come over. He was doing work with them, and he would just come over and hang out and stuff. And I always try to stay out of their way when they were hanging. But one day I was just in my little studio making a beat, and I heard a knock on the door. And Diamond was like, yo, I like what you're doing in here. You know, and because I had my own little setup and I was, you know, running Pro Tools and doing this, that, and the third. And he was like, you know, I like your sound. Maybe you could help me out with some engineering work. I'm working on this record called The Dime Piece. Still filthy for real. Fill it up till that cup runneth. I got a weak stomach. Throwing it up and keep gunning. Gin rummy. King of the deck. I go dummy. What's a king with respect and no money? I think hungry. You got a hunch. Go fish like you never choke. I'm out to lunch at dinner like you never smoke. I never quote. It's the best that I ever wrote. But everyone so the same in the basically, I did a bunch of work helping him out with that. Tracking, engineering work, some mixing stuff here and there. And it just kind of came into this relationship where we were kicking it a lot. And basically, it was like a work trade. He's like, look, you're doing all this work. How about I just do some beats for you for your next project? You know, like, you help me with this album, I'll do 5 beats for you. I was like, all right, well, how about we just do a 5-track EP? And that's kind of how that started. And we ended up doing one or two more joints outside of that. We dropped one of them. I dropped on an EP back in 2011. It was an EP called Dylan Ain't Playing. And there was a joint that Diamond did on there. We did called Take Japan.
Aviator shades, what's behind them? Cover up his eyes cause the sunshine blind him. You could look all over the earth and not find him until he shows up in the sky with diamonds.
But yeah, so the EP was just, it just came out of this like work relationship and I don't know, he's kind of taking me under his wing, you know what I mean? And I'm very grateful for the look and the music that we've made.
When did he know that you could? I mean, it sounded like he heard you making beats, but when did he know that you could rhyme?
Yeah. So like one time we were down, like, you know, like the house we lived in, it was like a big 2-story house, and there was like a basement studio that was like the band studio, and it was nice. It was like a big open space, and one time I was just down there kicking it, and they were just playing beats. And one of my roommates just started freestyling, and it was just the three of us sitting down there, you know, whatever. And I just was like, you know, bump it. I'm gonna rap too. Cause before I would always kind of like try to stay out of their way and not seem like I'm, you know, trying to get in on their biz and stuff. But we were just kicking it at that point. And yeah, we're just freestyling back and forth. And you know, Dime appreciated it, I guess. It was just real regular. Everything was real natural and organic and regular. Like, it was never like a pitch or like, you know what I mean? Like, it just kind of happened.
Right. Today, you talk to people, producers and MCs, about collaborating. A lot of it is, you know, via email or whatnot. But also,
right. So
very rarely you get like in-studio stuff. But so I want to ask you about that. But also, how, like, when you're collaborating with someone like Diamond D, or even, you know, vice versa, this question would be easily just for Diamond D as well, but how do you, or when did you know that this kind of, this collaboration was going to work, like that, you know, that you, your voice fit his beats and his beats fit your voice?
I mean, right off the jump, I mean, in my mind, you know, it was like a dream come true, because I've grown up being a huge fan of Diamond D and his whole persona and the whole, like, producer, rapper, DJ, best kept secret, like his whole persona and image and concept has always been like, you know, he's always been a hero to me. So I've always loved his beats and has always been a fan of his whole style. So already for me, I knew that my style kind of accented his, you know, because I'm, you know, I'm a student of that era.
Mm-hmm.
I'm younger, you know, I'm 34, but I'm a student of the 90s stuff. I wasn't quite there for it, for all of it, but, you know. From the very first song we did, which is actually the song called Let the Horns Blow.
You hear the kid coming in your direction, so official that I'm rolling with a horn section. Let him blast. They're telling you to get off your ass. I've been told I play a hell of a show. I ain't gas, but I will let you know when you give up the cash.
I wrote that, yo, truth be told, I wrote that like 7 years ago, and it was supposed to be for the Dime piece. And that was the first beat that he gave me. And this was before we had even agreed to do an EP or anything. He was like, yo, I like your style. I think you would sound good over this beat. And it was actually a different version of the Let the Horns Blow beat that he had done with a drum break on it and a whole other thing. And I wrote the song, and it just didn't. It ended up not making the cut for the Dime piece. So we ended up reworking it and kind of redoing the beat a little bit and using it for Black Tie Affair.
Dylan make it feel good like a doctor could. I'm getting cut like I'm in surgery. Life is so good that it's all been a blur to me. You feel the heat catch a burn to the
really,
third degree.
From right off the jump, you know, I feel like he kind of like had an idea of what I sounded like and what my approach was, and I feel like he embraced it, you know what I mean? And of course, Diamond's beat style to me is like the quintessential, you know, it's one of my favorite sounds in all of hip hop. So I was already ready.
Okay, I thought so. Writing like I'm about to paint a Picasso. Never going pop and ask word of my pop show. So if you want bars, I'ma charge a cost dope. Cooking like I'm over a hot stove. The story how my flaws should be sold and not sold. Colossal props, oh, I got those. See me with a snot nose wherever the pot grows. Who's holding? I'm too golden. Y'all caught the balls like Anquan Bolden. Listen to the brass.
Actually, I want to ask you, I have a few questions about Let the Horns Blow. I really am interested in the kind of writing that you kind of mentioned it, but right, the writing to this track, because it really seemed that when I was listening to it, like, you play off the music, you know, the horns, you know, the women singing, you play off that in your rhyme. So, as you just mentioned, you had there was a different version of the track that he first presented to you. So how does that work with this track where you're writing? Are you consciously playing off what you're hearing while you're writing? Is that like playing in the background? I mean, just take us into this writer.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, my writing style, pretty much I strictly write to the beats these days. It's very rare that I'll sit and write a whole verse or pen a song or come up with a concept without the music to it. I feel like as a writer, to be the most creative I can be and the best product I can present, it has to be one with the music. And as far as technique, I feel like it's a little more difficult. It's a little more time intensive to play off the beat like that and to do that. And that's what I like to hear as a fan. So that's what I try to make myself. I'm always up for the challenge, you know. And the fact that I had these little things to play off of, you know, the horn bridge and like you said, the little choral sample and stuff. That was the canvas I needed, you know, to find a way to stand out a little bit with the rhymes, you know, because everybody rhymes. So, you know, I feel like it makes it a much more cohesive musicality, right?
Right. Another thing that's great about the song, and you mentioned it in the track, there's no hook.
Yeah, that's funny. Dime didn't like that originally. He had sent me, because the first version of the beat was like a minute 37, right?
Right.
And this was like, you know, a while back, and it was supposed to be for the Dime piece. So I just wrote to that minute and 37 and recorded it and sent him back the demo. And he's like, oh, this is dope. You killed it. He's like, but this was just a demo, D. He's like, this is only 2 minutes long. Like, we need a hook, and it needs to be an actual song, like, you know, because he's very much about, you know, proper formats and stuff like mm-hmm. that. And I was like, all right, D. And I just kind of kept with the same formula that I had going, because I felt like I didn't want a hook. I wanted, the beat was more conducive to just these little repeating bridges,
right,
you know,
right,
than having a standard hook. That's just kind of how I felt. And so I just kind of kept going. So yeah, I think Diamond definitely wanted a hook, but I ended up just kind of doing what I did.
It's great to listen to, because what I kind of noticed is that when you have kind of the choral singing or the horns going in the clear, that is your kind of your music cue to change the verse, or, you know.
Exactly. So that was kind of the way I was feeling it. It's non-traditional, and I dig it. It's more like a jazz kind of trading fours than having like a pop, you know, like a proper hook.
You say I'm rhyming like I'm in a tuxedo, which is what you spit on, let the horns blow. What does that mean?
Well, at the time and still at you know, I feel like part of my aesthetic, I'm into clothes, I'm into fashion, I'm a short dude, you know, I'm 5'7" and a half, so I've always found ways to stand out. I'm into suits and all that. And so basically, you know, the feeling behind that is that, like, yeah, I wake up every day, I put on a tuxedo before I write my raps. Like, you're getting this classy rap right now. You know, I take myself real seriously when it comes to this. I guess that's kind of what I was going for.
Yeah, no, because I do, cause, so I get this, it's weird, I mean, the video for Feast, you're in a tuxedo, but then you get the sense, like, listening to this album, that you are rhyming, like, or even, like you just said, writing everything in some sort of tuxedo or a suit.
Yeah, it's like I wake up and put on my rap uniform, you know, like, I'm trying to create the atmosphere for that.
Doing surgery, we make deep cuts and cause the kind of ruckus people leaving police cuffs. So ease up, fam, nobody going ham. Homie, I don't eat pork, you ought to understand how the plan is mapped out. We following protocols, we planned an exact route. Don't bother to hold applause. Tomorrow the dough is
ours. Today we spend it first. That's
why what is that? I mean, is that also a kind of a? I don't want to say like kind of like a level of maturity you're trying to display as well as an artist, like that you're not a kid rapping, you're more of a
I think so, and I would also say it's probably a nod to Diamond D, a nod of respect. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm gonna show up, I'm gonna be, you know, dressed to the nines and ready to represent. You know, because it, especially years ago, and even, you know, to this day, it's an honor for me. It's a very big deal. It's not like anything I've ever done with someone who's always been a friend first or something. You know, here's this established, highly revered artist that has given me an opportunity. So, you know, I'm gonna take it to the utmost. I gracefully escape, keeping my face woolly. I'll be straight, letting my fate pull me, while these other flakes is quick to break like some fake jewelry. So can I handle the business that's mine? Name a time you see me with a chick who isn't a dime. Hold up.
I want to ask you about the track Femme Fatale. How does it kind of fit into the EP? I asked this because the four other tracks are like flow wise and beat wise. I mean, I feel like there's a lot going on in those tracks, and then Femme, you get, there is a lot going on, but at the same time in the ear, it's a very mellow track to me compared to the rest. So what is the purpose kind of this track within the context of the EP?
Sure, great question. So, you know, when I was going through these beats and picking them out and kind of trying to let this project kind of coalesce, you know, that particular beat for Femme Fatale is one of my favorite intonations of Diamond's style, you know, his beat making style. I feel like that is like a really truly classic, like Diamond D beat, you know, whereas Double Up is maybe a little quirky, and you know, Let the Horns Blow has like an old school feel to it too, but for me, like, the Femme Fatale is like dead on, like Diamond D, you know what I mean, with the jazz loop and the vibes and the way the snare is cracking. So beat-wise, I knew I wanted that on the record. And as far as concept-wise, I was actually going through like a weird sort of breakup situation at the time. And I also knew, because this was towards the end of the writing session, I knew I wanted like a story, like some storytelling rap, because most of the stuff is braggadocio, you know what I mean, like regular,
right,
just rapping for the sake of rapping, which I love, and you know, I ain't mad at, but I did want to have something that had a little bit of a story to it, just to display that skill set, you know, and as a challenge to myself as a writer. And I thought that beat, with how open it was, it had like a repetitiveness to it that I thought would lend to telling a story, because it kind of grabs you and just kind of keeps you going and keeps you looped in. So really, with all those factors put together, I just wanted to run with the concept I had. I was, you know, in my feelings a little bit about this breakup, so I wanted to create this version of this chick who kind of reflected aspects of that.
Oh, so is that why at the end you, like, the guy says, "I'll do it again"?
Yeah, because the whole thing was like, I was still into this chick. I knew she was wrong. I knew it was bad. I knew it was not a good look, but nevertheless, the things we do. You know, he caught it. Hey, she thrust the blade in and twisted. He resisted, told him one false move from your assistance, and you gets it. She yells for me to come and bring the heat a hunt. Put the pistol in his mouth and show him how to eat a gun. Get on your feet and run. But I ain't never killed a man, but so much adrenaline, I know that I will and can.
So, musically, we kind of discussed a little bit, but on music on the EP, you hear your pianos, you hear horns, you hear guitars. As a lyricist, what do you like about each of these instruments?
Sure. Okay. So to start with the horns, you know, I actually had a horn section come in and play over the sample part, and then there's a bunch of stabs and stuff that go throughout, and those are stuff that I added in post to kind of like accent my lyrics and stuff. What I love about horns is the Miles Davis is probably my favorite character in all of music, and you know the horn is a lead vocal essentially, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think that just the brashness of the brass and just how it can take over real quick and then fade back out, you know, with the bah, bah. I love that. You know what I mean? And also, and it's really a nod to Diamond, who, you know, we all know kind of helped usher in the horns, you know, right. And was a pioneer in using the horns. And so even the title, Let the Horns Blow, is really a nod to my perspective on Diamond's legacy, you know? So that's that. As far as piano, you know, I play a little bit myself, super duper basic. And I think the piano is probably the most expressive of instruments, you know, or at least to my knowledge. And to be able to look at a piano and see the musical scales and, you know, it kind of makes sense. So for me, piano is almost like words, just because, you know, it just makes sense to me. You know, it's a lot more, it's, I guess, more mathematical to me because I can see it, you know, I can see the notes being played. I can see the chords. And so it kind of lends to my writing style, I feel like. As far as the guitar, that was my boy Ben Hameen, was living in that Collective Efforts house. And we did that a long time ago. I think it's really just a rhythm guitar underneath, just kind of keeping the beat going and giving a little bit of extra texture underneath, you know? So I appreciate the really kind of the grittiness that it adds to it. And just a little bit of like something out of the ordinary, because you don't hear a lot of guitars in hip hop mm-hmm. like that, you know? Yeah, man, and shout out to my boy DJ Harrison out of Richmond, Virginia, who's in the band Butcher Brown. He's the one playing Rhodes on Femme Fatale.
Oh, wow.
And
nice.
Initially, there was no Rhodes on there, and it was just the sample with the vibes. And at the 11th hour, I wanted something a little extra to make this, to help make the song move, because it is a long song and it's a long story. And it's even hard for me, you know, to pay attention sometimes. So I wanted to give it a little extra. And I had him play a Rhodes take underneath it. And I brought Diamond over to check it out. And he was blown away by it. And he had me turn the sample super, super low and turn the Rhodes up. So you hear the Rhodes like way more prominently in the final version than it ever was before. And I think it just added so much extra to the story. And you know, he's accenting certain parts when there's drama, when there's a climax, when there's, you know, shots fired, this, that, and the third. You know, my man DJ Harrison did a great job, I thought, of kind of just adding to the music of it.
Yeah, so we've spoken about individual tracks and kind of like what they mean to you and what purpose they mean to you, but as an overall EP, what was your kind of mission going into the Black Tie Affair? And then how do you think that kind of, how does the final version represent your mission?
Word up. Well, I think, honestly, I didn't have too much of a mission beyond like getting it out and it's in the best possible way, you know, making sure that all the lyrics were up to par and that everything was presented properly as far as the artwork and just the overall feel of the album. I wanted it to feel classy and to feel grown and to feel, you know, I was trying to level up my style to match Diamond D's. Mm. Because in the past I've done stuff that's goofy and you know, I've done a bunch of different styles. And, you know, I don't know what people know me best for. It's maybe for being funny or for the food or for whatever. But I just kind of wanted to reestablish the fact that, yeah, at the end of the day, you know, my main thing is writing and rapping. And that's what I'm going to do on this project. So that's what I was trying to show, you know. And I wanted it to be natural and feel, I wanted it to not feel forced. I didn't want it to be like, yo, who's Diamond D working with this clown? Like, how much did this dude pay Diamond for these beats? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I wanted it to feel like it made sense and that it was an actual collaboration and not me just, like, getting over.
Right.
And I think I executed that to the best of my ability. I'm happy with how the record came out and you know, the artwork and we just had a couple release parties, one in Atlanta and one in Jacksonville, and those went well. And it was, you know, it was cool to see that people kind of dug the vibe, you know?
I mean, it is. I think every track is a strong, complete EP that there's no tracks that right now that there's no tracks that I'm skipping over.
Thank you, man. That means a lot, man. I really appreciate it. I mean, it's only 5 songs. That was another thing. I was like, yo, you can't mess this up, bro. Like, it's 18 minutes. Like, there cannot be any minute of whackness. You know,
is there talk about doing a full length album with Diamond? Or
we haven't made it that far yet. Mm-hmm. But hopefully that's something that can happen naturally based off of, you know, what we're able to do with this and how people respond and whatnot. Yeah, no, I would love to set that in motion. So, hopefully, you know, I'll send Diamond a link to this podcast and with the hot link to this moment right in there and kind of look at him like, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
What's up, dog?
The new EP is called Black Tie Affair. It's produced by Diamond D. Dylan, the MC, is over it. It's a great, great EP. Dylan, thank you so much for joining me at the library with Tim Einikel.
No, thank you for having me, man. It's an honor and a pleasure to be amongst such great company. And, you know, thanks, bro. Good to be out here. Much love.
Okay, I thought you would. Dylan make it feel good like a doctor could. I'm getting cut like I'm in surgery. Life is so good that it's all been a blur to me. You feel the heat, catch a burn to the third degree. Do I come correct? That's a bet, sir, certainly. Putting work in, polo stripes on. And hold a mic with a string tight python. It's like he'll hold the whole world in his right arm. The ladies feel the love, but the fellas hear a fight song. Blaming on the vibe of the trumpet. Or how I stay inside the ride of the drum kit. See me at your local speakeasy with a strumpet. Cheap champagne to the face, I ain't drunk yet. Everybody at the top got ruined. Rookie of the year on the shoe-in. Okay, I thought so. Writing like I'm about to paint a Picasso. Never going robbing, that's word of my pop show. So if you want bars, I'ma charge a cost dope. Cooking like I'm over a hot stove. The story how my flaws should be sold and not sold. Colossal props, oh, I got those. See me with a snot nose wherever the pot grows. Who's holding? I'm too golden. Y'all caught the balls like Anquan Bolden. Listen to the brass. This for everybody who was dissing in the past. A whole lot of snakes hissing in the grass. But as I elevate, I ain't kissing any ass. Your boy's on top of the world. Hey, now can I hear the girl say? Right, appreciate it. Just a little something me and Diamond D created. ATL, Georgia, Bronx, New York. Sounded like sort of straight out of 94, cuz what you thought it was? Used to rock Nauticas. I was coming up in Duval riding on a bus. Fast forward, skirt your brakes on. Developing the elements and making a great song. I've been staying on my paper chase strong. So we can get it in, girl, but not if it takes long. Pardon me, do I sound horny? You little bullish boyfriend's corny. You will be regretting the day when you ignore me. Looking back on it lonely at age 40. Later on, she sent me a text. Let me read it to you. It says, good looking, always have flavor cause I understood cooking. Any competition stepping to me get took it. How I make a hit and I ain't even put a hook in. Yup, I'm holding down my lane proper. Looking fly like I came from the opera. And I'm riding high in a helicopter. Twisting up something, man, sipping on vodka. Nah, can y'all say certified? If you heard that I'd arrive, well then you heard it right. Uh-oh, there go the horns. They roll with him everywhere that he performs. Leaving stage torn, breaking all norms. Getting cake, even if I ain't getting on. And that's no ifs, ands, or maybes. Now can I get something from the ladies?
Thanks for listening. Changing the game from the state it was in. Acting up like a young Jack Nicholson. First name Dylan, last name Magnificent. And I was born in Michigan.